is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Hey everybody, it's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Well, we'll see how long we're on today because, Dave, the weather forecast isn't good in Baltimore. So there's a very good chance we could do a whole show, we could do a partial show, we could be in and out. You never know. It's going to be a grab bag today. So we know we've got this hour from 2 to 3 anyway, and we'll make the most of that, and then we'll have to see what happens after that. You'd think, you know, city like Baltimore, rich tradition in baseball, they'd put a roof on that building. Put a roof on it.
I know. Yeah, maybe we can send Riverside Roofing out there or something. Get them makeshift roof. Yeah, it's a beautiful day out today, but it looks like it's really nasty back there. So probably going to be. It was kind of fun. I really enjoyed the doubleheader yesterday. I mean, obviously you wanted a different outcome in the second game, but it was kind of cool to watch. I like that they just kind of, you know, threw that together and it went off pretty well, but. This team, win or lose, I find very interesting.
They're very entertaining. And what we're going to – I should let people know in a few minutes here, Ryan Roland-Smith will join us, so we'll talk Mariner baseball with him. I was going to ask you quickly, I don't know if you were scrolling through any of the highlights or anything yesterday, but did you see the Twins game? They were playing in snow. It was snowing.
You're kidding.
No,
I did not.
There was snow coming down.
Yeah, you'd think that would be in Colorado, you know, but yeah, still, it got pretty cold around here, so we got some weird weather going on right now. But, you know, that's kind of the cool part. I like the changing of the seasons. You know, you start off the season with a little bit of rain in the spring, maybe snow, and then get into the summer months, and then it lasts all the way through to fall, which is my favorite season, of course. Because of football, but
of course.
Anyway, yeah, but it was fun to watch that last night, and boy, you really saw what you know that should have been James Paxton's start, right?
Yep.
And instead, we got Margavichus, who really fell apart at the end, and then Sadler comes in. He has a wild pitch. He makes an error that could have got him out of an inning. Yeah, it was really tough at the end.
It was not a great. I mean, Swanson looked good. He gives you two innings scoreless, so I was happy with him. Vest gave you an inning of scoreless ball. So between those two, you liked what you saw. Margavichus was not good. It wasn't what you were hoping for. And then Sadler, I felt like we were watching him melt. I felt like you could see the tension. He commits the error, the wild pitch. I could feel it. I felt tight as he looked tight. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was just like, this is going poorly, and it's going poorly in the wrong direction really, really quickly.
Yeah. It's weird how to, you know, and we were talking about how fragile things are with pitchers, which we'll talk to a pitcher here in a second who I think is probably not so fragile, but even though they had a typo in his name, Ryan Roland-Smith, the first time
his
he got
jersey.
A jersey.
His jersey has a typo.
It was so fun. The way he put that was just hilarious. But you can see. Yeah, and just draw a little W in with a little arrow sign down there. But you can see, like, how does a guy like Margavichus, who, you know, is for the most part pretty accurate, how does he spike one into the grass? You know, I mean, that was such a weird thing to happen, you know. But if one little thing's off, and then all of a sudden, like you said, Bob, you get the pressure starts to build, and you can just see it kind of take the guy over physically. But I mean, you know, you're hitting a box, you know, pretty regularly, the size of the strike zone, and all of a sudden you throw one that doesn't even get to the dirt.
Yep.
Holy smokes! Yeah. That was an unraveling there.
Yeah, it was just it's so weird. I'm still getting used to 7-inning games because it's you know the first one goes into extra innings, which was 8.
Right.
So it's not even a full length game, and they're in extra innings. So it was kind of weird. But yeah, they split. Listen, you go on the road in a 4-game series. You of course you want to win the series, but the realistic hope is for a split. So if they can take you know one of these next two, then I would leave Baltimore feeling good about things. In a 4-game series, if you can take two of them, perfect. If you can get three, even better. I don't expect it. You hope for it, but the expectation is let's at least split in a series like this on the road and then move on to the next. And we'll talk to a guy who knows all about that stuff, who's with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Our buddy Ryan Roland Smith is with us. How are you, man?
Doing well, guys. I'm actually about to sell my house in a week or so, so I'm getting handy with the tools. You should see me. So I'm doing that, watching some Mariners. So I'm all good.
Oh, he's there in a tool belt, and he's got a hammer in his hand, and he took a break to exactly. talk to us.
Wow, it's sounds sexy.
Off, man. You should see me. Dude. You should see me. That's such a good look. I'm clueless, man. I don't know what I'm doing. But put it this way, man. I was pressure washing the deck, and the guy who's helping us out, Brandon, he's killing it. He's putting in some new sinks and stuff like that. He walks outside, and he looks at me, he's like, dude, you're crushing that deck. Once it dried out, you should see, man. There's lines all over it. It's brutal. I'm going to drop the value on this house in 2 seconds.
Well, you need to get Dave over there. Dave is the king of pressure washing.
It's my new favorite pastime. I'm not going to lie. I love it. It's a lot of fun. I got to go a little over the top, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, you got to be careful on the wood now, Ryan. You
exactly.
might strip it.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I was just going to do that this afternoon, but it looks like we might have a rain out. But, so in between all of your duties there with the home improvement, you're watching this series, I'm sure, and what'd you make of the doubleheader split yesterday?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm loving some of these come from behind wins. It's, you know, and you can say whatever you want. You can say, well, oh, they don't last, or these teams that have to, you know, claw the way back in, never last. But I just love the fact that when you've got a team, especially young players, if you're facing tough pitching, and we've seen this the last, you know, few days, that you're always in it. I mean, they're down 6-0 in Minnesota against a really tough team, against a guy who was dealing. 6-0, and they just good at bat after good at bat, and they got to Matt Shoemaker. And by the way, Matt Shoemaker, we saw him with the Angels. He's that guy. So if everything's not perfect, you can get on him quick, and they did that. That's what I love about this team, and they did it again yesterday. And on top of that, Justice Sheffield, good to see him start the year off, bit of a struggle. You don't want him getting on that plane that 5 days in between, questioning how everything is going to go or getting too big picture. All of a sudden, he starts making some pitches. He stays with that fastball-slider combination, and he's good. He was so fun to watch yesterday.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to hit you with, is what we've seen out of the rotation so far, because that's, for me, where all of my questions were centered for the most part, because you could attach a question mark to just about everybody but Marco, which is interesting. His first two starts have been bad for whatever reason, and we'll get into the other guys, but I'm curious what you're seeing from him. I mean, nobody doubts that he's probably in a film room right now looking at every last bit of his mechanics and his motion and trying to find what's going wrong, so I don't doubt the effort that's there, but the results have been awful the first two games. What have you seen out of him?
Yeah, they have been really tough. And this is one of these things. When you're a guy who lives in a generation of guys who throw 97 to 100 with the nastiest sliders you've ever seen as a starting pitcher, all of a sudden you're pumping 88, then people are going to look at your glass half empty. So all of a sudden you have two bad ones in a row. We haven't seen this from him since he's been in Seattle and he's gotten in a groove. He's always been able to bounce back if he's had a rough outing. So when you see two in a row, you really start to question what is going on. For Marco, he looks like, and I'm not making excuses whatsoever, but in the month of April, there is something about those first 2 weeks. Your stuff just isn't as sharp. Now, I understand. I'm not talking about these guys who are on 95 to 100 who can just blow you upstairs in the strike zone. But me included, man, with that month of April, for whatever reason, didn't matter what kind of spring I had, everything was just, it didn't have that late sharpness, that bite. You're losing a mile per hour. You're losing that command. You're trying to do a little too much. Maybe it's a little bit of weather involved as well when you've had 6 weeks of sunshine and you get to some cold or you deal with some rain or whatever it may be. Everything's just off a tick. And when you're 87 and you're just absolute command freak like him, that you need that. And that's what we've kind of seen from him. Now, I'm not concerned about it whatsoever. It's so easy for us to sit back. You know, you guys, myself, and everyone else say, oh, well, you know, here we go. It was all he got lucky these last couple of years. No. He does so many good things well. And I think that once he figures out that little backdoor cutter of his and that changeup for a strike, game over. He'll be right back to where he's supposed to be.
Hey, Ryan, we were talking about, maybe you can just describe this. We talked about Margavich's spike in that ball in the grass, you know, and then just kind of seeing him start to sort of, and then Bob's example was Sadler. You know, he had the fielding error, and then he throws a wild pitch. How do you reverse that? I mean, you could almost see the tension coming from out of the, just flowing through that guy. How do you reverse it, and what situations like that have you been in?
Well, you could see it right after Margavich spiked that ball. You just see the reaction. Like, it's just this angry, like, just like you mentioned, tense, just frustration, because it's like, here's the thing, man. When you're a young player like that as well, this is one part of it. And all of a sudden, you've now got the chance to get in the rotation. Let's not forget, this is a guy who was battling his butt off to be in that rotation. They sent him to the bullpen. So for him, he's frustrated. I'm not going to lie. It's not like, oh, thanks, guys, for giving me a bullpen spot. No, he's like, no, screw you guys. I want to make this rotation, and I'm going to prove something to you. All of a sudden, something feels off, and there's a chain of events that happens. You spike that ball because you're trying to do so much with that breaking ball. Frustration just oozes out of you, and all of a sudden, your command's all over the place because you're just trying to do a little too much. I think for Nick Margavich, and again, this goes back to, I'm not piling this onto the month of April, just like I did with Marco Gonzalez. I think everything starts to level out. You start to get in a rhythm. You start to get over the fact that you didn't make the rotation out of spring training, and you start to not worry so much. You feel like, okay, I'm part of this team. This is my spot. I'm going to be okay. I think for Nick Margavich, man, he is so good. I think I spoke to you guys about this too. Last year, he had to keep going 6 innings, 7 innings, 7 innings, 8 innings for anyone to stand up and say, man, this kid's a stud. He should be in this rotation full time. He had to keep proving himself over and over and over. And then he goes into spring training, doesn't make that rotation after having a massive spring training. I think once everything just starts to settle in, guys start to get their roles. You mentioned Sadler in that bullpen. You start to get that role. You start to get that comfort level of guys around you, a couple road trips, and then it all starts to even itself out.
So as far as the rest of the rotation goes, I don't feel like any of my questions were answered, you know, because outside of Kikuchi, brilliant in that first one, 10 strikeouts, the second start.
He was my biggest question mark, too. I mean, get back to, I spent all that time on Marco Gonzalez. Kikuchi was my biggest, he still is. Can this be sustainable?
Right.
When's that bump in the road going to happen? That's the big question mark. Justin Dunn, we're going to see him today. Again, there's still a lot for him to prove. I think even from last year, 2020, and then when he broke in the year prior to that, he hasn't got a whole lot of experience too. So you've got to let that sort of, you know, weigh itself out. And then the other guy, Chris Flexen, who, you know, look, I say this all the time, man. You have a bad taste in your mouth, pitching on the East Coast especially. You know, they're over in Baltimore right now, pitching in the big leagues, having no success. You go off to Korea, you get an opportunity to make a bit of money. When you get on that plane to go to Korea, you, in the back of your mind, or in the front of your mind, say, I'm never going to play in the major leagues again. That's how it is. When guys fly off to go play in Korea or Japan, they're like, okay, I'm closing the book on this major league chapter. I'm going off to play in Asia, try and make some money and extend my career and financially set myself up. All of a sudden, here he is, two-year deal, comes into spring training, and now he's got a situation where he wants to make sure the Mariners are happy with what they've got. Scott Service, meeting some of these guys for the first time. There's all that carrying on his shoulders. So I think for Chris Flexen, you know, watching him pitch, once he gets a good feel, that big curveball, he's got to throw that pitch more. The reactions, even some of the best hitters with the Twins against that curveball, he barely threw. He kept going back to that cut fastball all the time. He starts mixing that curveball in for strikes and below the strike zone. Like he did in Korea, that's exactly what he did. He's a high percentage of that pitch. I think he's going to be okay. But all these little things that go on inside your head a little bit, whether you're Nick Margavich or Chris Flexen, you know, there's just so much going on in between the years. I think everything starts to level itself out. But, man, this rotation, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, like you said, the one guy, Marco, who's just an absolute model of consistency, is the one who's struggling the most. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a roller coaster like it already has been, and we'll see where we are in about, you know, mid-May into June.
Well, let me ask you about Dunn real quick, because it's interesting. When he was first coming up, when we first started hearing about him, I kept hearing he's a strike thrower. The guy throws strikes. And then his problem since he's we've really been watching him has been his control, his command. And then that first game, Ryan, 8 walks, and we can talk about, oh, he was getting squeezed here or there, and maybe that's true, but 8 walks, man. I mean, and we saw it a little bit during spring. What is, for a guy that was noted as a strike thrower, for him to have the command issues that he's had, is this a mechanics thing? Is this about him getting in there and breaking down film and working on his mechanics? Is it a focus? What do you think that is?
I think it's a focus thing. You mentioned that. He was in that, you know, post-game press conference. I love listening to how these guys answer some of these questions. He said, oh, you know, some of these cues, these physical cues and everything else. And, you know, and Dave knows this, man. When you're in the moment, when you've got 2 seconds to execute at that level, you cannot be thinking mechanically. You can't be thinking about, oh, hey, where's my front foot landing? Am I on the inside of that back foot when I'm driving off? All these little things, you know, that Justin Dunn was talking about. It's all, you know, it is in your head. Now, last year, 2020, watching him pitch, it was, he would get to 2 strikes, okay, no problem. First pitch strike, whatever. But he gets to 2 strikes, all of a sudden, ball 1, 2-2, 3-2, trying to do too much to put hitters away. And when you're watching him this year, the first start we watched, one thing I noticed, and this is something that's quite interesting, the amount of breaking balls and off-speed pitches that are thrown, the percentage is way higher than it's ever been. For Justin Dunn, watching him pitch, for having to rely on that curveball for a strike just was not going to happen. And that's something that they want him to have, a higher percentage of off-speed pitches thrown inside the strike zone. It can be exhausting when you are so used to throwing a four-seam pitch, when you're playing catch, when your catch partner is 60 feet away, 90 feet away, and that feels normal. And when you want to sneak back into the count when you're in the minor leagues, you get that fastball across, and it's 2-1. Now all of a sudden you're asked to throw that curveball for a strike. It's all of a sudden, guess what? It's 3-1. Because you're exhausted, man. You're trying to get that pitch over for a strike, and you just know you cannot do it. And that's something, when I was watching him, just watching him go about it, that's how it looked. So I think for Justin Dunn, whatever the percentage of with that curveball for a strike, it has to be better, has to throw that pitch over for a strike way more to have success. The fastball is not going to blow anyone. He's not going to blow anyone away with that fastball. And that breaking ball, man, he's just got to get comfortable throwing that thing at, you know, 40-50% like he did the other day.
Hey, Ryan, my favorite guy to watch is J.P. Crawford, I decided today. I love the way he looks. He looks cool.
I decided today.
Yeah, I just – and then, like, when – I love his arm. I love watching whenever, you know, there's a throw down to second, how casual he is about it. It's just like he's such a cool customer. Is there somebody on this team that you can't have J.P. Crawford. You can pick somebody else, Ryan. But is there somebody on this team that you love watching?
Well, from a defensive standpoint, you can't go past Evan White, man. It is so refreshing, especially whether you're a Mariners fan or even a baseball fan, as a pitcher. Watching Evan White and pick some of the balls he picks is insane. He is good, man. Defensively, obviously, he won the Gold Glove, but it's on another level. And your boy JP, sometimes JP just, you talk about how casually, sometimes he flings some throws over there. I'm telling you right now, Daniel Vogelbach is not picking those baseballs. Those are throwing errors, right? And again, Daniel Vogelbach's long gone. He's never coming back. So I'm going to, you know, throw him under the bus a little bit. But just watching that, watching Evan White do his thing, man, it's pretty to watch defensively. Now, hitting wise, I'm loving watching Mitch Haniger. I just, the fact that he looks on a different health level, comfort level in the box, that pitch that broke through when he was with us and he got traded over and he was an all-star and everything else, he'd get fooled by a changeup or a breaking ball down below the strike zone, and you'd be butt out and bat would be out in front, caught out in front, and you'd crush the ball down the left field line. We're seeing that again. That's a lot of fun to watch him at the plate, how comfortable he is, how healthy he is. But hey, nothing beats Evan White picking those balls, man, especially when you're a pitcher and you're watching that all day long. It's fun to watch.
Ryan, always great stuff. We love talking to you. We appreciate it. Best of luck on your house. Take it easy with the pressure washer. And if you need help, make sure you call Wyman, because I'm telling you, he's a pro.
I want to give you some advice. Turn the power off, okay? Don't mess around with electricity. We can't lose you, man.
Hey, listen, I was mounting, and this is a little, you know, a little backdoor brag right here. I was mounting over-the-counter microwave, my bad. And sure enough, I was tapping something. I got a little zip, zip, zip. I was like, oh, man, I'm going to go and flick that fuse off downstairs. And honestly, I couldn't find the fuse box. I'm not going to lie. That's on the back of I am.
Check the garage.
My wife, hey, where's this fuse box at? So once I found it, I was off and running. So appreciate the advice.
Ryan, we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Thanks, Ryan.
Sounds good. All right, guys. Have a good one.
There you go. Ryan Roland-Smith, always good to talk to him. Let's take two.
Take two.
On a one-year deal, so County Watch guys, it's over already.
Yeah, in case you missed it, you were potted down there at the very beginning.
Clowney Watch, it's over.
Yeah, it's over. Jadeveon Clowney signs a one-year deal with the Browns, can make up to $10 million, which I know Clayton will love to talk about, up to. So I'm not sure exactly what his guarantees are, but it's substantially less. As we talked to Clayton the other day, Dave, and sort of revisiting what it was he was offered from the Browns, and what did he say, between 16 and 17 a year on a multi-year deal?
Yeah.
Was that initial offer? He turned it down. He ends up with the Titans on a one-year deal. Now he signs a one-year, sounds like incentive-laden deal with the Cleveland Browns. So I guess good for him. That could be a really formidable team if he's healthy and he's able to, you know, have an impact out there. You know, good for him. I certainly don't root against the guy, but it's interesting to see that price tag come way down and the perception of him come way down.
Yeah, the Browns are good. I mean, they're really turning things around. I think a lot of it had to do with Baker Mayfield, but a lot of it had to do with their running game. And they're just a good team now. Now, all of a sudden, they're a force. It's a crowded division, you know. The AFC North, you're talking about Baltimore and, you know, and then the Steelers. And so they're going to be able to compete, Cleveland is there. I don't know about Cincinnati, but Cleveland is looking like a good place. It's just a shame for Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, I think he's kind of one of those guys that can't get out of his own way. And we just saw that with Jaren Reed, where Jaren Reed, you know, his emotions took over. And he wasn't a businessman in that from that standpoint. So I think the same thing seemingly is happening with Jadeveon Clowney. But at least he's got a deal, and he's a disruptive player. You know, they were talking about that today on the NFL Network. It's not like he's going to get a ton of sacks, but he does make a lot of problems in the run game.
Well, the NFL officially announced that phase one of the offseason program begins on Monday. It'll run for 4 weeks. Now, the Seahawks players and a handful of other teams have announced they want all virtual, so they're not going to show up for voluntary workouts.
Yeah, it's interesting how this is being put out there, Dave. These are voluntary workouts, and you know, you hear people saying they're boycotting. They're boycotting, which makes it sound much more negative, and that there's this tension. And, you know, I've read some stories that this is sort of their response to a 17-game season. And listen, I don't know if that's the motivation or not. It's just things worked out well. I think everybody thought we were going to see a really poor quality or a lesser quality of football last season because of what was going on, the lack of practices. And I don't think we saw that. I think it looked like any other season. So, and I think that's what, you know, you listen to some of these guys saying, hey, we played as well as we ever do, and we did that virtually, you know, and we learned a lesson. Now, whether I don't know if you buy that or not, but this is a really interesting thing that I think is being portrayed as something much more negative than it is.
Well, I disagree. I think this hurts two groups of people. It hurts the young guys and it hurts the coaches. I mean, I think the level of play, everybody was on the same, you know, sort of program. So maybe it wasn't glaringly obvious, but I mean, look, Quandre Diggs, Dwayne Brown, Nick Ballore, Carlos Dunlap, those guys, you know, Russ, Bobby, they don't care. They don't need that. But what about Cody Barton and Ugo Amadi and LJ Collier and Daryl Taylor? I mean, those guys need this stuff. And so I think it's a shame. It does come off. I mean, anything union related or, you know, as far as the team, it's always going to come from the veterans. Well, they have their money and they have their success and fame and everything, but I still think that you need to practice, and it's really tough on the coaches as well. I don't think you can you get the same amount done during the season. So, yeah, I feel sorry for the young guys.
Yeah, well, it was definitely something we can dive deeper into later on, assuming we have a show. If the game gets rained out, we'll talk about this. But Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate was where you can find more info on that. All right, coming up, more on the Seahawks OTAs, but a potential new addition to the team we'll also get into as well. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Well, the word has come down. It is official. Today's Mariners game has been postponed. It will be made up as part of a doubleheader beginning at 9:35 a.m. tomorrow. So you got two more seven-inning games going on tomorrow. And we'll effort somebody, Blowers, or somebody to talk to today coming up later on. But, Dave, you like those seven-inning games, so you get two more tomorrow.
Yeah, that was okay. I mean, I'd rather they were playing baseball this evening, but, yeah, it was okay. Did that bother you, the shortened inning? I mean, it's not like the second, you know, the guy in second base.
I can live with it. I don't prefer it. I'd much rather nine innings. I guess I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to baseball in some aspects. But I can live with that. I'm much more accepting of a seven-inning game than I am of a starting an inning with a runner in scoring position. I just think that is the hokiest, most it's a gimmick. It just seems like something you do on the playground. It's the equivalent of a ghost runner. It doesn't feel, and I know it's benefited the Mariners more than a couple of times, but I still don't like it.
I think hokey is a perfect word for that. It's very hokey. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. So but yeah, the two games, that was pretty interesting. And yeah, they finding a lot out about this team. Did you see the stat that Sam Haggerty, that was only the second Mariner to hit one out on? I don't know why everybody talks about Utah Street. It's spelled weird, first of all. But, you know, that's, I guess, a big deal that you can hit the ball out of the ballpark into the street. But, you know, not since Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, of all people.
Yeah,
Sam Haggerty is the guy to achieve it. I'm trying, and I immediately start thinking of the lefties because that's that spot for lefties to hit out of there.
Right.
I'm thinking, all right, who were the power lefties since Griffey? And man, it's a long list. I mean, your other big hitters that you know of were A-Rod and Edgar and Jay Buhner. They're all right-handed hitters.
But Kyle, yeah, could hit one over there.
Yeah, you certainly would figure Kyle could. I'm trying to think of just power hitters that immediately came to mind, and most of them, you know, Nelson Cruz, right-handed. Yeah. Most of them have been right-handed hitters. Seager's a great one, but yeah, Sam Haggerty of all people.
Yeah.
He goes 2-for-3 yesterday, and what felt like a turning point in the game, a huge home run, tying things up. And then the wheels kind of came off with the defense. You had three errors yesterday. I think we immediately thought, I don't know if you thought of this, when Ty France committed his error, I was thinking about when we talked to Ryan Divish about France, saying, hey, is he a decent third baseman? What do you think? He said, I think as a third baseman, he's a really good DH.
Yeah.
I felt like we saw a little bit of that yesterday.
Yeah, and he's just playing all over the place. Just like Dylan Moore, I saw him in right field. You see him in left field. You see him at second base, just playing all over the place. So that's cool. But, man, Haggerty just spanked that thing.
Yes, he did.
I mean, that was such a beautiful swing. I think you said this before. I agree. It's something about a left-handed swing that's just pretty to watch. So, yeah, but, that was a nice little bit of hitting there. So it was kind of exciting to see out of Haggerty who, you know, I think, did they bring him up once somebody got hurt? Who was it that got hurt that they brought up? Or was he on the opening day roster? I can't remember.
They've made a couple of moves since, you know, when Evan White got hurt. And then obviously when Paxton got hurt, they've made some moves. And then doubleheaders, they're bringing guys up and down. So I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a long. I can't remember which transaction he was a part of or where he started. But
hey, let me ask you a question about one of the errors was on Torrens.
Yeah,
Torrens. It was when the ball got knocked out of his glove.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe.
So
yeah, it was called a fielding error.
Yeah, I was listening to Angie on the post game show. She is so knowledgeable, but she was talking about how he didn't take his mask off. He didn't take the catcher's helmet off. And then also, you know, you're supposed to grab, I guess, with the other hand just to kind of secure that. But that was kind of bad luck, too. I mean, his knee hit right into his catcher's mitt, right at the spot where it popped the ball out.
Yeah. I hadn't even really considered the aspects of playing catcher and getting the mask off and things like that. That's a great point. That's a great observation by her. I hadn't even really considered that. And you're right about her, because she knows more about baseball when you talk to her about, I'm talking game plan baseball. I'm not talking about, you know, this guy did this in this season and this guy is the home run leader in this. No. I'm talking about strategy. I'm talking about what, you know, hey, in this situation, you should have bunt him over here. He did this wrong. She is so dialed in to the details of this game that I don't know if that comes through for most people on the broadcast, but when you talk to her about baseball off the air, it's impressive how much she knows.
Oh, man. You know, I sent her a text after she interviewed Cal Raleigh. And was talking about all the different techniques for catchers, you know, and how they put the knee down at the last second and all of that stuff. And just, you know, just so, yeah, I texted her. I'm like, I wish I knew as much baseball as you do, man. It's fun to listen to. But, yeah, that was something I wouldn't have noticed, you know, that still had his gear on. And then he didn't, Terence didn't, you know, bring the other hand over there. But you know, like I said, I mean, that was just, it was just kind of bad luck. That knee just hit right in the right spot there. And it was a good throw by J.P. Crawford, too. I mean, it was a little offline, but, you know, it was the relay from left field. But, I mean, if he threw it any more inside, he's going to hit the base runner.
And by the way, how about Crawford? I know he's now your favorite player to watch, as you just said. You determined that today.
He's so damn cool.
But he's been hitting. He's been hitting. I mean, he's not doing a ton of damage. He's not
torching it.
Yeah, he's not hitting home runs or anything, but just he's making contact. He's making consistent contact.
Yeah.
I think he's hit in what they put up the stat, six of the last seven, something along those lines. I can't remember, but his average is up to 256, and he was way down in the 100s. So it's good to see that a guy who was the leadoff hitter, who's been bumped down to the bottom of the order. I think Haggerty was hitting ninth yesterday, but J.P. Crawford just kind of quietly upping that average, making consistent contact, getting on base, and that's the key for him because he's such a stolen base threat. You know, if he walks or gets a hit, I want the guy on base, and it's just good to see him making some contact out there and seeing that confidence grow.
Yeah.
So your new favorite player is giving you reasons to be excited.
I'm just saying, I just think he looks cool. He just, the way he goes about, he makes it look easy, I think, is what it is. And especially how calm and collected he is whenever there's a throw to second, and, you know, where he lets the throw. It was a great throw by Terence, by the way, but, you know, the one pickoff at second base.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just kind of, he catches the ball right where the base runner is.
Yeah, and by the way, Robinson Cano was the king of that. People can feel about him, you know, as they see fit. But he was nobody looked cooler than Robinson Cano when he played, or more calm, and Seattle got the best out of him, and then he fell apart when he went to New York. So there you go. All right, coming up, speaking of the Mariners, have they shown that they've got the clutch gene? We're going to talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, will join us. We'll talk some Mariner baseball with her. But the question, we can ask her this question, but do you feel like, Dave, now with three extra inning games, they're 3-0. In those extra inning games, have we seen the clutch gene? Is this a team that just they find a way to get it done when their backs are against the wall, to use another cliche? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I wish I had another cliche for you, but can't think of one right now. But well, I would say they're the opposite of what you saw from Sadler and Margavichus yesterday, and that's what can happen. You know, if you're young and you think too much, and you let it get in your head, and when you have something go wrong, then all of a sudden, like we were talking about with Margavichus, with Ryan Roland Smith, that, you know, he was visibly angry and got uptight, and it all just kind of unwound from there. This is, you know, I think it's about coaching. I think that's what brings about that gene. I mean, yeah, you have to have guys that are confident, you know, and we'll see with Kelnick, you know, how I can't wait to see how he responds to, you know, adversity. But I think it's a lot about coaching, of really getting guys. And I mentioned this yesterday or the day before about how, you know, the saying in the NFL for rookies is, hey, man, don't worry about making mistakes. Just do it 100 miles an hour. If you're going to do it, do it. But the worst thing you can be is indecisive. Mm-hmm. And what that means is you're thinking too much. And I feel like that's the key. And so is it a gene? I mean, I guess in a manner of speaking, it is. But I think more than anything, it's about the coach is telling these guys, hey, man, you're young. You don't have a lot of experience. Don't let the same play beat you twice, as they say. And just the ability to move on from that. And I know Andy McKay does a really good job in the, you know, in the farm system as far as all of the psychological parts of the game. And he's really into that. And I think it's coming through that you're seeing these guys are not just good athletes and good players and everything, but I think they're well coached so that they can go out and when things go wrong, and they're going to go wrong because you're young, that they have the ability to just move past it.
Well, and we talked about it after the first game of the season. The first game of the season went into extra innings, and they came from behind. And we talked about the idea that, you know, you're looking at a game going, okay, maybe it's not our night, and we get them tomorrow. You know, that's the beauty of baseball is you're playing the next night almost always. So you can wash away that one and move on to the next. It's one of 162. So it's pretty easy to have that attitude. And that was instilled right out of the gate that, all right, yeah, when all looked lost, you were able to find a way to get it done. Then they did it again, and then they've done it again. And we talked about this moment. I want to hear this cut number three. One of the least likely heroes, if you will, if you're pointing to somebody to sort of pull a game out of the fire with his bat, you're not thinking of Haggerty, but that's who came up with the big one.
Here's the pitch on the way. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to right field. Back she goes, and goodbye, baseball. Sam Haggerty with a two-run home run here in the top of the seventh inning has just tied this game at 6-6. Holy smokes.
Holy smokes. Crushed it. Crushed it. Hit Utah Street. First Mariner to do it, as Dave pointed out, since Ken Griffey Jr., what year was that, 94?
I thought it said 99 on the graphic.
Was it 99? 99, okay.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. But, yeah, it's been a long time. And I bet you if you told him before that, you know, I feel like these guys are like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. they don't seem to be affected. And, again, I think it's how they're coached. But, I couldn't believe that when I heard that stat. But you know, like you were going through earlier, who are the power hitters that are left-handers, you know, Kyle Seager. But, you know, I mean, the chances of him hitting a home run in Baltimore, what are they? They have one series a year with the Orioles typically.
Yeah, it was a weird stat, and baseball's full of weird stats. You know, they've got the most obscure stats, the first to do this on this day in this setting since blah, blah, blah. And there's a million of them, but you know, the idea that Haggerty would be the one to come up and do what he did, and good for him. It was a beautiful swing, just an absolute bomb of a shot, and gave them an opportunity. And unfortunately, the defense and the pitching let him down. But it's cool to see that, and people always talk about young players, that they don't know enough to be scared, or they don't know enough to be intimidated, or they don't know enough to be, you know.
Nobody told them. They can't
like they're just, you know, sort of the ignorance is bliss mentality.
Right.
That sometimes, you know, that ignorance or lack of experience can work in your favor. You don't know that you're supposed to, you know, pack it in and work for tomorrow. You're supposed to lose here. What, you know what I mean? It's sort of that youth can benefit them in those situations because they're attacking every game like, you know, everyone means the most. Every one of them means everything to them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's how you have to be as a young guy. You know, we're talking about bring this up fairly often, but Lenny Dykstra in the book Moneyball, where he turns to Billy Bean, he's like, "Yeah, who's this pitcher out here?" He's like, "Yeah, that's Tom Seaver, Lenny."
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I'll hit him. I'll rip him."
Yeah.
And he would just go out and do it. I mean, like you said, I think it's kind of a blissfully unaware of, you know, the pressure and who you're playing against. It's just baseball. Go out and just let it rip. And that's what that swing told me anyway, is looking at Sam Haggerty. It was beautiful. And, you know, he looked confident and sure enough got the results. So it was that's going to be fun to watch this year and watch these guys develop into, you know, veterans.
Yeah,
as the season goes.
I just feel like so far, and you know, we always have to keep it in perspective or throw out the disclaimer. Yeah, I know it's only 10 games, right? It's very early to make any hard and fast judgments on this team. But what they've shown in these 10 games is they're a fun team to watch. I mean, there's a lot of youth. There's a lot of exciting players. There are a lot of things to be interested in if you're a baseball fan. Because there are so many questions, there are so many unknowns on this roster that, you know, there's a curiosity. All right, how does this guy look? How does this guy look when the game's on the line? How does this guy look in the field? Or how does this pitcher look? There's so many different unknowns on this roster. And there's so much hope attached to a lot of these players. And they're giving you reasons to hope. Ryan Roland Smith brought up Evan White. I tweeted about that in one inning, that the pick that he made on a throw, that there's no way, I don't care who, whether it was Marmolejos, whether it was Ty France, whether it's Vogelback, whoever you want to throw in there at first, they're not making that play.
No.
He made it, and he made it easily. And then he made another play within that same inning. And I wrote on Twitter that it's amazing how much of a difference his glove makes to this team's overall defense in the infield and how much confidence it gives a pitcher out there. And I think that's why you heard Ryan bring it up, because pitchers will talk about, you know, when there's just a stellar glove, whether it's a third baseman, a first, especially first, because they can eliminate a lot of would-be throwing errors. It is a real, real plus to have that. I know his bat isn't where anybody wants it. Maybe his bat is more of a minor league bat at this point, but his glove is just spectacular.
Yep. Yeah. So, and that's the thing. I mean, we take him for granted, kind of, because some of those throws, you know, and I was talking about to Ryan Roland Smith about watching JP, and he's like, well, you know, some of those are, you know, in a pretty wide range of throws. I mean, he's got a great arm, but yeah, it's gotten to be where you don't even notice any throw that's offline to first base.
Yeah, so good stuff. There's a lot to like about this team, and we'll talk more about the Mariners as our Mariner insider Shannon Dreher will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.